At this time of year, it's almost like the wind changes, bringing with it that fresh wanderlust that comes with spring air. People look for new jobs or new loves, at the very least, a new haircut. On today's episode, we're catching that wanderlust, exploring the comings and goings from the places we love, and asking ourselves why we come and go in the first place.
People fall in love with cities because they want to belong somewhere. I think that's what anyone is always striving for. Somewhere where you feel safe.
That winter, I left Melbourne. 9 years ago, I had fallen in love with the city, and my yearning for it had come back stronger than ever. I'd always fantasized about living there, but the time that had passed had only made it seem harder. I was scared of making a mistake. I wanted first to understand. Why do we fall in love with certain places? Is this feeling something to follow, even if it means going all the way around the world? Are we somehow happier if we live in the places we love? Or, simpler still, does this kind of love last?
So we're going to go for a walk to Maybachufer, which is a canal that has a really lovely market during the week. We're about to cross Sonnenallee, which is sort of my favorite street in Berlin, because I really like the mixture of cultures that you have. Everybody kind of coexisting. It's one of those strange places in the world where everything just works. There's a mess, there's chaos, there's people selling things in the street, there's electronics shops selling phone cards to call home to wherever you come from, jewelers, hairdressers. It's all a big mixture of stuff, really, and I kind of really like the variety. I feel like it's alive. I feel like I'm walking through a living organism. I wish I had a relationship with a person the way that I do with the city. Coming home from traveling, I just feel fall in love with it again. Every now and then it surprises me with a gift, like some kind of spontaneous choir in the dankiest train station that you can think of, or even small things, just like watching Arabic families going shopping and realizing that there's a whole different parallel world here that I haven't discovered yet.
Like here's this guy. We can probably guess that he was out at a techno club until 7 a.m., and he just woke up and rolled out of bed. And now this guy on the bike. And now he's coming out for his first cigarette of the day. Or no, does he already have a beer in his hand? My name is Sarah. I'm from the US, originally Minnesota.
Where do you live at the moment?
In Berlin, in Kreuzberg, where we're walking right now, this very moment. I've been here almost 3 months.
What are your first impressions?
Well, I came to Berlin after traveling in really epically beautiful cities like Barcelona and Paris, and I came in at night and I walked outside first thing in the morning and the entire street is like covered in cigarette butts and just really nothing very beautiful about it. So initially I was not super impressed with Berlin, but then as soon as I went to the canal and Tempelhofer Feld Park, I was definitely in love. Like, I definitely fell in love in that moment. I think people that are attracted to big cities in general are like dreamers, and I don't know if you've heard this term, maximizers versus satisficers. And so the general idea is like, there's some people in life who develop the capacity to be satisfied with what they have. And then there's maximizers who always want to like get like the top thing, the thing that's like most interesting to them at the moment. But the thing is that they're almost never going to be satisfied. I think when you've lived in different cities and dated different people and et cetera, it kind of can become like never ending.
I think I'm definitely a maximizer.
Yeah. No, me as well. And so, you know, you kind of can ask yourself at some points, like, when does it end? Like, do I have to like end it at some point? Does it get to be like too much?
July 23rd. Berlin in summer is an urban utopia. Every day I wake up late, the sunlight streaming all the way into the room through the tall windows. Outside, bikes rattle over cobblestones and the sound of many languages murmur under my windowsill. Enormous trees fill the quiet street. Beautiful people sit under them drinking coffee. And me? I wake up every day wondering, what am I doing here? This is the city I've dreamed of, but now that I'm here, something feels terribly wrong. I escape to London and go for a walk with my friend Dave.
We're coming up to one of my favourite bits of brutalist architecture in London. So one of my favourite things about the east side of London is all of the social housing infrastructure, if you like. They get dotted around all the place and they're kind of like, each one's this sort of little experiment. One architect's vision of what social housing would be, sort of around the late 60s, 70s. And so this actually, like, if you stand... I mean, it's just like this kind of... I think it's like a... I mean, it is like a new relationship, right? It's sort of like you get up every day and there's like this kind of buzz in your stomach and like you're really excited about life and kind of have this energy, I guess. But, you know, the gloss can wear off pretty quick. And it's like the first 6 months I had here were really difficult. And the fact that I'm still here and I'm sort of feeling quite positive about this place, it's not because it's shiny and glossy and it's like, oh, isn't it fucking wonderful to live in London? Like, I was burnt out. I think part of the reason why I'm doing okay in London is that I'm not treating it the same way I've sometimes gone to places where I think I've gone with a naive sensibility that it'll be forever and everything, and, you know, get married and have lots of houses. Which might have been attainable in Bogota, but certainly not in London. Maybe like a bit of garage space, maybe like half a canal boat, a light cellar, tent.
In Barcelona, I meet Juliana, who says,
I just feel it, like, I just feel, and I felt it the minute I put a foot in Barcelona, the first second, I said, okay, this feels good, this feels right, I need to live here. It feels like you're full, like, completely, like, fulfilled, like, when you just look around you and you say, like, I don't need anything else. Like, it's gonna sound a little bit strange for you, but I've never fallen in love, like, with a guy. You know, I have felt in love. I always say that Barcelona is like the real love of my life, because I have never bet so much for anyone like I did for Barcelona, you know. Yeah, and it makes me happy every day. So.
Back in Berlin, the weather turned colder. I call up my friend Setio again.
So now we're walking up Panierstraße towards the canal. It is kind of a very typical Herbstwetter, like autumn weather. So it's getting a little bit drizzly more. I'm going to get cold pretty soon, I think. I'm really looking forward to it.
Do you want to sit down for a minute?
Yeah.
So there is some truth in the idea then that maybe you can move somewhere and be able to live a slightly different life to the one that you lived at home.
Yeah, I think to a certain extent, and then when you get a certain level of maturity or you've discovered who you are, maybe you start bringing a little bit of who you are with you to wherever you're going to go. You know, when you first come here, Berlin's like a really amazing summer romance. I mean, it really gives you everything you want. And then the winter comes and it gets replaced by a really grey and long winter where if you don't have anything to do, if you're not motivated by yourself to fulfill yourself, then you fall in a heap. And that's like a relationship. Like if you're really madly in love with someone, they can't always be that person who is giving you everything you need. If you don't have your own happiness, then you kind of maybe start begin resenting it a bit. You begin resenting Berlin, like the winter basically comes, right? something like this. I'm Setu. I lived in Delhi till I was 7. Then I moved to Australia, to Melbourne. Lived there till I was 21. Then I moved to Berlin. And then I moved to...
That?
Huh? Why? Oh, I followed you here.
It was then, sitting by the canal, that I realised. My summer had cured me of longing. Berlin was too hip, London was too stressful, Barcelona too pretty. The only yearning I still felt was for places I hadn't yet been.
Eugenia Zubchenko produced that story. The supervising producer was Alison Chan. Additional thanks to Andrew Reynolds and Katie Hawkins. On the note of comings and goings, we now come to the final part of a three-part series. You don't have to have heard all the other stories for this one to make sense, but you can catch the others at allthebestradio.com. The series is called The Modern Odyssey, and it's all about what it means to leave somewhere and start fresh here in Australia. This final story is about coming, going, and coming back. It opens with Sabi Bueller reading her poem Vignettes, Memories of a German Childhood.
Longings linger amongst my childhood memories. Memories of earthy aromas, decomposing leaf litter on the woodland floor as we gather mushrooms and berries, pine cones and firewood, and absorb the mysterious magic of the dense, dark forest. Birch and beech, oak and ash, fir and pine, standing stoic throughout the seasons, harbouring birds and beetles and embracing the scamperings of squirrels. Uncles, aunts, cousins, grandparents and family friends, all generous with hugs, advice and family news, and always Kaffee and Kuchen to seal the importance of our visits. Handshakes cement greetings, farewells and agreements. Tears and prolonged embraces when we said we were leaving for a different land. Time to time, memories surface, and I miss the familiar things we had to leave behind. And there are fleeting but profound longings, not only for the land of my birth, but the serene days of my childhood.
Once I finished uni, I planned to leave Australia to either move back home or relocate to another country to find a job that suited me. My parents came to visit me during graduation and suggested that I continue to live here. I could get some experience and if the opportunity arose, I could live here permanently. They told me that Australia had more opportunities for young people, the country was generally safer, and the life is far more comfortable than the one we had back home in a post-war Sri Lanka. Since I lived here for close 3 years, I thought this might be a good idea. It was familiar after all. But something still seemed to be amiss. I have a beautiful home in Kensington, an interesting life. But since I entered uni, I have a deep desire to give it all up, pack my bags and return home to Sri Lanka. I keep replaying this scenario in my head again and again and again. Liliana is an immigrant. She migrated to Australia as a child.
When I started school, of course, I didn't speak any English, so we spoke Italian at home. That was quite challenging, and I tended to feel, from the word go, a little bit on the outer. There were some other children at the school who spoke Italian, so I guess we formed a little kind of like subgroup of the Italian kids, or the WOGs, as they used to call them then, and I learned English fairly quickly, but this feeling of slight dislocation lasted for a very long time.
Liliana's sense of alienation as a young child is similar to the alienation I experienced in my first days in the country. Through a series of racist microaggressions, I realised that as a person of colour, I stood out. Without realising it, I had been automatically othered. Zora, Slovenian Australian, started dreaming of a return to Europe once she encountered racism in church.
When we saw people approaching us, we just stopped talking. That we are not called woks or whatever, woks and worse.
Racism in all its forms made Liliana and Zora feel alienated. The feeling of being othered is just hard to ignore and just get over. Eileen and her family relocated from Israel to Australia to meet their father and make a better life for themselves. Eileen's mother could not stand her father's infidelity, and the breakup of the family once they got here led to a stressful court case. So Eileen's mother dreamed of returning home back to Israel.
She didn't have anywhere to live, and my father kept, you know, chasing her and making life as difficult for her as he possibly could. So going home was that's what you think yourself if you went somewhere to a country and you were only there a little while and your life was being made miserable, you'd be wanting to go home.
Home is a place where you can live with your loved ones and it's familiar. Every Christmas I spend holidays with my family. I love their familiar faces and I love going to the beautiful beach full of golden sand and palm trees. A house smells of our natural Christmas tree. And I love just relaxing in my balcony with a book engulfed by the pink frangipani tree that's been there since I was a baby. For the first couple of days, the reality resembles a dream of return I have in my head. Liliana's dream of return, her fantasy, had been built from stories her parents had told her over the years.
It started in childhood because, you know, of course, my parents always described their homeland and their hometown in glowing terms. There was always, you know, rich history and a rich heritage. It was the way of life, you know. It was a rural way of life. My parents lived in a very small country town, the typical sort of hilltop town, you know, where all the towns are built on hills with the little steeple, you know, the church with the steeple right at the top. I mean, people built that way in the past because they could see their enemies approaching, really, if they were on a hilltop. So this is how many, many small towns in Italy are constructed. So there was that. There was the religious element, you know, the Sunday morning mass where everybody would walk to church, the smells and the sounds, the smell of cooking on a Sunday, you know, which was the big day of celebration. You know, preparing of the lunch usually done by the nonnas who were the grandmothers, you know, in the family. And there was this sense of extended family, you know, in that time in Italy, there were usually three levels of family, you know, all living in the one, under the one roof, simply from, you know, economic sort of necessity. But it seemed to me that it was a bit of a dreamscape that I would like to enter.
Or maybe it is a fantasy based on a childhood full of happy memories that have to be abandoned during a relocation to another country. Zora remembers.
Young and free and running and, you know, dancing in movies and friends.
Inflamed by her parents' stories, Liliana actually travelled back to Italy.
It did feel, from an emotional point of view, like a homecoming. You know, it's like getting in touch with your tribe and feeling whole and at home and comfortable within your skin when you are, you know, in your homeland.
As she experienced Italian culture, she began to feel unsettled. Something felt amiss.
All the time in the back of my mind, I was assessing, you know, can I get a job here? Will I be able to live sort of easily? And will I have the support system that I have in Australia? Because, of course, by then my family had all cemented themselves in Australia. So I think I felt that I would be dislocated once again if I moved back to my homeland.
Once Zora travelled back to Trieste in Italy after 2 decades in another country, she found that everything had changed.
things are not actually the same anymore. Somehow they're smaller, somehow they're, well, they're different. The houses, they're not as beautiful as I thought they were. The church that I used to go there, I thought was beautiful, big church. Now looks like a nice size of chapel, but not a church. And, you know, all that seems, time changes a lot. It is the people, that time was communism, yes. Was still communist country. People were very unhappy. The villages were more or less empty because lots and lots of young people went over the border. They couldn't find jobs. There was no jobs. So what I find in villages, half empty, with old people, not too many young people around. Yeah, I thought that was very depressing. Yes, when we were growing up, that was before communists come, yeah? The churches was full of young people, a lot of beautiful singing. And children, well, was so many of us right on the front, and, you know, everybody's so real important. Went back after so many years through communism. They cut religion out completely. You were not allowed to go to church. If you went to church, you have a nice punishment or worse, ended in prison and what have you. They were doing because it was communism is hard regime, very hard. So they were doing so well that people stopped going because they were scared. And children stopped coming too.
Eventually, Eileen's mother returned to a home in Israel.
It was very interesting, but it wasn't the sort of place I'd like to live in. When I went to stay with my mother for a while in Golden Hill, that was where she lived in this little unit in Israel. And, you know, people would go into the supermarket, and my mother did it too. They'd tear off a plastic bag, you know, and put one tomato in it. Then when they wanted a banana, they'd tear off another one. They'd have these millions of plastic bags, and they were floating around everywhere, and I couldn't help thinking, I wouldn't like to live there. It was very dirty, no sense of environment or anything like that. And in the supermarkets, God, the women were aggressive. Bloody hell, they had their trolleys and that, and they'd push you out of the way, and very, very interesting.
Back in Sri Lanka, I began to miss Melbourne, my room that smells of vanilla and bergamot, all my friends, the coffee at Victoria Market, and running along the Maribyrnong River at dusk. I talked to Liliana about her laying her dream of return to rest and the process of finding home again.
You know, being friends with lots of people who have done that, and they keep going backwards and forwards. And when they're in Australia, they think, oh no, it's going to be easier and more beautiful if we're living in Italy. And then they move to Italy and after a few years decide, no, we were better off in Australia. So I think at some point, you know, you have to sort of make some kind of realistic decision to stay put. So I decided to stay in Australia and travel to Italy whenever possible. It was only really when I started working in an office that I integrated a little more into the Australian sort of way of thinking and the Australian way of life, because I found that in offices there were probably a lot more Australian and perhaps English heritage people.
Like Liliana, Zora found that she had to let go of her fantasy and settle in life in Australia.
A certain period of time, and you get used to on these customs and you make new friends. When I go there, people, they usually say, oh, you miss your home in Australia. And I say, no, I got my home here and I got my home there. But when I'm there about 3 months, I want to come back. I want to come back to my family, because as lovable as they are there, my family is here. And where is your family, there is your home, at least for me.
Home is an emotion, it is a feeling. I need to feel at home rather than be at home. Although Eileen did not feel at home in Israel, visiting her homeland made her feel like she belonged and revealed something that she'd previously doubted, her mother's love.
Must have been very hard for her, because I remember when I first caught up with her and went to Rutala, and she was ironing, and she just kept on ironing as we talked, you know, and I was only there a little while the first time, and then I went back to the room I had in Paris, and I was in Israel, in Jaffa. I remember my mother took me round to see all these old ladies who knew me when I was a baby. All the old ladies, when she took me down to Jaffa or somewhere where these old ladies, they were old when I was born, and they made such a fuss. Oh, Chayla, you know, and we remember you when you did this and this and this, you know. And that was when I realised for the first time in my conscious life that I was a wanted child and that I was loved. I wasn't just an accident.
For some reason, I just can't completely remove the dream of return from my mind. I keep returning to topics about race, immigration, diaspora, and cross-cultural identity in my work. Thankfully, I'm not alone. I've encountered others like Liliana that use the same coping mechanism and try to stitch together a sense of self based on fragmented pieces of memory and story. Liliana's art evokes questions about home, belonging, and settlement. Where is home? Am I home? Why do I miss home, though I am technically at home? What makes a home?
Making artwork that really honed in on sense of identity, sense of dislocation. I made a lot of pieces of artwork, and I still continue to do so, that focus on that sense of cultural identity, dislocation, gender identity as well, being a female, growing up as a female in an Italian environment as opposed to growing up as a female in an Australian environment. One of the pieces that I made early on, a sort of a transparent trunk that went into the Immigration Museum, and so the trunk was just the skeleton of a wooden trunk painted in red, and inside this structure were large pieces of paper folded to represent the dowry or all of the sheets and pillowcases, etc., and clothing, you know, that made the journey into a different country. Once I started making that type of work, I found that when I'd finished with the work, it just laid those ghosts to rest.
Since my visa has ended and I have no option of extending it, I will be going back to Sri Lanka. I might return to Melbourne for the occasional holiday and to meet my friends. Once I go back home, I have to relocate again purely for the purpose of a job. A lot of questions are currently clouding my mind. Will I feel at home in Sri Lanka? Will I miss Melbourne? Will my dream of return be a fractured memory that mixes memories of Colombo and Melbourne? Is there ever going to be a sense of settled? What's going to happen to my sense of belonging and placement as I keep moving out of necessity? Will my feelings of displacement be replaced by feelings of rootedness? Will I ever belong?
That story was by Devana Senanayake. Gregory J. Thorsby was the sound designer. The supervising producers were Selena Shannon, Sarah Mashman, and Alison Chan. Additional thanks to Layla Caridi of Multicultural Arts Victoria and 3CR in Melbourne. All the Best would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands on which we make these stories and pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. All the Best is made at FBI Radio in Sydney, in association with SYN and 3RRR in Melbourne. Our executive producer is Alison Chan, who also mixed and compiled this episode. Jordan Fennell is our Victorian State Coordinator. The All the Best Community Coordinator is Chloe Gillespie. Our SYN Community Coordinator is Erin Dick. Matilda Fay is our social media producer. And I'm your host, Samantha Groff. Shining Bird composed our theme music, and Annie Hamilton designed the artwork. All the Best is heard across Australia on the Community Radio Network and is made possible by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. You can find all of our other episodes at our internet home, allthebestradio.com, or subscribe on a podcast app so we can keep coming to your phone and never go away.